And for each region, the following features were computed. Compactness, which is defined as a shape factor, normalized as 1 minus 4 pi times area of the region divided by its perimeter square. I'll describe compactness again later when we take up shape analysis in the next chapter. The xy coordinates of the centroid of the region by averaging the x coordinates and the y coordinates of the pixels within the region. The size or area of the region in the number of pixels for each tolerance level. So this is the vector. There are three features calculated for each region for each tolerance level. And then you take the distance between the feature vectors for successive tolerance levels, find the minimum, and then take the corresponding features. This feature set with the minimum distance is selected, and the corresponding region is labeled as the potential calcification region. And then to confirm if a given region detected by this procedure is a calcification or not, we put some limits. The size must be greater than 5 pixels, with the pixel size being 50 micrometers, and must be less than 2,500 pixels, which corresponds to about 6.25 millimeters square. Now, this could be modified too, depending upon the largest region that you want to label as a potential calcification or as a calcification. You can modify this and set an appropriate limit. So in case there is a region that is grown to be much, much larger, you say, well, you cannot have a calcification of that size in a mammogram. And less than 5 pixels, we said it could be a noisy pixel or an outlier or some artifact in the image. That limit could also be modified to 2 or 3 or 4 pixels, depending upon what you want to allow. The contrast was also limited to be more than 0.2. Most calcifications have a distinct difference with reference to the background surrounding immediately around the calcification because of difference in density between the calcification and normal breast tissue. Now, sometimes calcifications occur within tumors, and the tumor density is also higher than the density of normal tissue. But this level of contrast was found to be appropriate. The background region required to compute C was formed by using a ribbon of thickness 3 pixels around the contour of the region detected. So here is an example, a part of a mammogram with several benign calcifications and the contours of those calcifications detected automatically. Now this image is only 512 by 512 pixels, about 2.25 centimeters by 2.25 centimeters. But this is part of a full mammogram which has about 1,500 by 4,000 pixels. So this is a part of a full mammogram that was processed. And here is an example with the malignant calcifications. That is the original image. And in the lower image, you see the contours of all of the calcifications identified. Now, when you have a detection task like this, there are two measures of accuracy. One is how many calcifications were missed. And for that, somebody, an expert in the area, has to identify all the calcifications and mark them. And the result of image processing is checked against that, labeling manually by an expert. And then you get the fraction of the calcifications that you detected, which is the sensitivity. And then there is a question of specificity, and that is how many regions detected by the method are not calcifications but are artifacts or wrong detections. And that is known as the false positive rate. How many false calcifications exist here, or regions that are not calcifications? And that is related to a measure known as specificity. So in Liang Shen's work, we did a study. Let me see. It's a small study. Two of the sections had a total of 58 benign calcifications, and the two other images had about 250 malignant calcifications. So we put plus minus 10 because each time we counted, we were getting a different result. So we were not quite sure how many were there, because malignant calcifications tend to be numerous, and then some of them could be a bit hard to detect and label. So depending upon the number of trials, we got different answers, which could be inter-observer variability or also intra-observer variability. So to accommodate for that, we put this number as 241 plus minus 10. And we got 81% detection with no false calcifications labeled for the benign case, and 85 plus minus 3% with 29 false labels or false markings for the malignant ones. This is a very small study. We didn't do a detailed study, but there are several papers in the literature where such methods have been tested. Now, we gave this method to a group at Johns Hopkins University, and they compared our method with three other methods for the detection of calcifications. But this was many years ago, about 15 years ago. This work was done in 1992 or 93, I don't remember. And then this method was found to work comparably well with three other methods with similar performance, but one other method had some computational advantages. So this, as I said, is fairly old work. Currently, there are commercial systems and several algorithms available in the literature where the sensitivity of detection of calcifications is very high, of the order of 95-96%. And the false positive rate, on the average over several hundred images, is of the order of less than 0.1 to 0.5 per image. So detection of calcifications has been studied extensively, and several methods exist in the literature with very high sensitivity and very low false positive rate. Another method that one of my collaborators in Spain developed is based on linear prediction of images and the use of prediction error for the detection of potential seeds for calcifications. The method that I described just now, that was developed by Shen, uses a simple seed selection method by just putting a threshold on the entire mammogram, and all pixels above the median are selected for region growing. Now that gives a very large number of seed pixels and consumes a significant amount of computing time. Now, Serrano and others, who are my collaborators in Seville in Spain, proposed to use linear prediction error to detect seed pixels that are within potential calcifications, and the number of seeds detected by this method is very small compared to a simple threshold such as the median. Now, I won't be able to describe this method now in this course. Linear prediction of images is described in the chapter on image coding and data compression. I don't remember if it is chapter 10 or 11. And in that, you will see several algorithms for prediction, two-dimensional adaptive prediction. Now, let's simply say that linear prediction considers a certain region of support, a window that is moved across the image, and the pixel attached to the window, but in the current position. Suppose you're processing this pixel, you take a window that is before the current pixel in some scanning order. So it has to be a causal window in the sense of movement of the window. It is not symmetric around the window. Using the region of support, a few pixels in the preceding columns and the preceding rows, you predict the value of the current pixel by using a set of weight coefficients or linear prediction coefficients. Prediction is very common in speech analysis and several signal processing algorithms. The predicted value is compared with the true value at that pixel location, and you take the difference, and that is known as the prediction error. In a smooth area of an image, where there is no significant or large grayscale variation, the value of a pixel may be easily predicted as a linear combination of a few pixels in the vicinity, or a region of support that uses a few pixels in the preceding rows and columns. However, when the processing window approaches a calcification such as these bright spots here, the density of the calcification is very different from the density of the surrounding normal tissue. So when the pixel, a pixel on a calcification is being predicted using a background or region of support that has only the background pixels of normal breast tissue, there'll be a large error of prediction. So wherever the error of prediction is large, by using a threshold, we mark the pixels as potential seed pixels, which are all these black pixels. As you can see, most of the bright spots, which are calcifications, have been marked with these black pixels. Which pixels get marked depends upon the region of support or window size used for linear prediction in the scanning order. Anyway, we just need one or a few pixels in each calcification region as seed pixels. In uniform areas, you see that no pixel is labeled as a seed because prediction error is very small. So the region growing algorithm that I described earlier, the multi-tolerance region growing, is applied only to these black pixels that have been labeled as seed pixels. So from each one of them, you grow the corresponding region. And of course, when you get one seed in this region and the region is grown, then if there are multiple seeds marked in that same region, you do not repeat region growing any further for that set of pixels. So from these, and by putting additional conditions on the contrast of the or density of the regions grown and the size, we got these contours and regions as calcifications. So as you can see, there are some calcifications here in the corresponding regions, and three here and three there, and a few more. Now, it's a bit hard for me to label these and explain or tell you which is true and which is false. The true ones are, some of them are fairly obvious. It is not clear to me if these are false or not. That analysis has to be done by a radiologist. So Dr. Desitel, with whom we have been collaborating, has helped us in the analysis of the sensitivity and specificity of this method. And we have a paper that is being revised right now. So here, we are including a detection step with the segmentation step. The last part, part C of this image, shows the segmentation. Part B shows detection. So I would like to distinguish between those two steps. So one is detection of potential objects of a certain type, calcifications here. The other is segmenting those, and both are done automatically here. In some cases, you could possibly place a seed manually and grow a region if there are a small number of regions to be detected. Calcifications, you would not be able to do that, and it is unreasonable to expect a radiologist to mark the calcifications and then do the region growing using an algorithm. So here, automatic detection of the seed pixels is essential. The previous algorithm also did it automatically, but it was computationally expensive because a very large number of seed pixels would be detected by just using the median as the threshold. And with a mammogram having several million pixels, the median could give you a very large number of pixels to process. Here, you detect using a better scheme, and you detect a very small number of seed pixels corresponding to calcifications. Now, here I'm showing the results with calcifications, but depending upon the prediction error and the nature of the mammogram, there could be a number of other distinct objects that would also lead to some seed pixels being detected, such as a tumor with high density. But when the corresponding regions are grown and further conditions are placed, such regions would be rejected and not labeled as calcifications. So there is post-processing of these regions detected by using measures of contrast and size, and those that don't meet the conditions are rejected, and what is left would be labeled as calcifications. Okay, any questions on this? What I would like to do is skip a few parts, and as I said, after I finish chapter 6, if there is time left tomorrow, I'll come back to some of these parts that I'll skip. There is section 5.5 on fuzzy set-based region growing to segment breast tumors. I'll skip this for now. This was done by Dr. Gugliotto, who is my collaborator in Brazil. And let me take up detection of objects of known geometry, which has a broader application based upon what is called the Huff transform. Now, some images may contain objects that may be represented by an analytical form with a small number of parameters, such as straight lines or parts of straight lines, or lines that could possibly be expressed as a collection of straight line segments, circles, ellipses, parabolas, and so on. If you can express a certain geometric form using a few parameters, 2, 3, 4, 5 parameters, then you could detect such objects in an image using the edge map of the image. You have to detect the edges present, and then you could attempt to detect these objects. Some examples are: the edge of the pectoral muscle appears as an almost straight line in mediolateral oblique mammograms. I showed an example of an MLO mammogram earlier, and again, if there is time, I'll show you the application. Benign calcifications and masses appear as almost circular or oval objects in mammograms, not malignant tumors. Malignant tumors typically have rough shape. Most cells in pathology specimens have circular or elliptic boundaries. I should say cytology specimens instead of pathology, to be more specific. In cytology, you get cells that have some specific shapes, circular, elliptic, and sometimes rectangular. And these are approximate. They won't be exactly circular. There will be some variations. Now, parts of boundaries of malignant breast tumors may be represented using parabolas with certain curvature. The detection and modeling and characterization of objects in this form becomes easy or possible if you have some information about their shapes and characteristics prior to image processing. So you bring in prior knowledge into your image segmentation and detection method. So let's look at the Huff transform. In the 1960s, Huff proposed a method to detect straight lines in images based upon the representation by this equation, y equal to mx plus c, where m is the slope and c is the position where the line intercepts the y-axis. So there are two parameters. In the xy space, to represent a line, you have m and c, slope and intercept. There are other forms of equations for lines, and we will see another one later on. So in the Huff domain, or parameter space as it is called, straight lines are characterized by the parameters m and c. The Huff space is mc. So a straight line in the image domain is one point in the Huff space. The intensity of that point will be, in the discrete case, related to the number of pixels in the line. So here is the representation of the straight line, y equal to mx plus c, where slope is m, and c is this value, where x equal to 0, y equal to c. Now, there are some problems with this representation. The disadvantage is that both m and c have unbounded ranges. The slope could be infinite if the line is vertical. And let me go back. If your image frame is only so much, let's say, c, the intercept would be outside the image. So you need to know the coordinates. You need to have a coordinate representation system that will include pixels or positions outside the image that you have, which may not be a problem. But if the line is vertical, then there is no intercept with the y-axis. Essentially, c is infinite. So that also creates some limitations. They can be handled in practical cases using some conditions, but they give you some problems or create difficulties in the representation of mc in the Huff space where you need to express the Huff space in the computational procedure. So Duda and Hart proposed the representation of straight lines. They took Huff's method and said, well, don't do that, do this, where use the rho equal to x cos theta plus y sine theta equation to represent a straight line in the xy space, where there are two parameters, rho and theta. Now this is another example. Earlier I was mentioning that the Privet and the Sobel operators look fairly simple, and they were proposed earlier and they were considered as original methods at that time of development of image processing. And although simple, they do have good background and they do have significant application. Now here, this equation being applied to the Huff situation or Huff transform is another simple modification that was proposed by Duda and Hart. But of course, at that time in 1972 or so, that was a significant development. And if you look at the number of citations of this paper, it's several hundred in number. So this is another example of a fairly simple idea that has important implications and is a significant development considering the state of image processing at that time. So going back to the straight line, the same line is expressed as rho equal to x cos theta plus y sine theta, where theta is the angle of the normal to the line from the origin, and rho is the distance from the origin of that normal, or the point on the line that intersects the normal. So now we have this representation, which also has only two parameters to represent any line in the space, xy space, and both of them are bounded. Theta is limited to 0 to 180 or 0 to 360, as you wish, and rho is limited by the dimension of your image and the coordinate system used. So depending upon how you set up your coordinates, theta will be limited to 0 to pi or 0 to 2 pi and rho by the size, and it's up to you to put the origin somewhere, the top left corner or lower left corner or in the center of the image, and accordingly rho is limited by a certain number of pixels. So to detect straight lines in an image or edges that are nearly straight lines, to which you can fit a straight line. Suppose we are given an image that contains a straight line. Let the pixels be represented by xn, yn, where n goes 0 to n minus 1, n is the number of pixels along the line. Now, if it is a gray level image, we need to have it binarized. So it is assumed that the image has been binarized, such that the pixels along the line are 1 and all other pixels are 0. If you started with a gray level image that has some objects and their edges, you must first apply a gradient, such as a Sobel gradient, binarize that and get only the edges and represent only the edge pixels as 1 and everything else as 0. In that edge map, you detect the lines. It is advantageous if the lines are 1 pixel thick, so you may want to apply a thinning algorithm and reduce all lines to just a thickness of 1 pixel. Otherwise, if you have a big block, like a bar pattern, within a bar pattern, you can fit many straight lines, and there will be some ambiguity. If the normal parameters are rho 0 and x 0, or rho 0 and theta 0, all pixels along that line will satisfy this relationship. Rho 0 is xn cos theta 0 plus yn sin theta 0, because they lie on the same line. So for a given pixel xn, yn, this equation represents a sinusoidal curve in the rho theta space. Suppose you now move to the rho theta space. In rho and theta, the x and y values that come in are constants. So you have x cos theta plus y sin theta, which is a sinusoidal curve in rho and theta. And then the curves for all of these n pixels, because they have the same rho, rho naught, and the theta, theta naught, they will intersect at that point, rho naught, theta naught, in the half space of rho theta. Let me show you this picture and then we'll come back. So here is a picture of a line. I just created that as a test image by putting these pixels as equal to 1 and everything else as 0. In the Huff space, which is shown in part B of this image, the intensity is modified to be log of 1 plus the value, so you can see the fine details here. The horizontal axis represents angle theta going 0 to 180 degrees, and the vertical axis represents rho, the distance from minus 75 to plus 75. Now, I chose the coordinate system such that the origin is in the middle here, and rho, that is going above the x-axis, was considered to be positive, and rho going below was considered to be negative. And then I can allow theta to go only 0 to 180. I don't have to go 0 to 360. I found this to be a little bit more convenient, so I did it that way, but you could take the origin there, and then your values for rho and theta will be different. So for every pixel here, there is a sinusoidal curve, and you can see some of those sinusoidal curves here. And for all of those pixels, the sinusoidal curves in the Huff space will intersect at that point, which is the theta of that line here and the rho for that line here, according to my coordinate system with 0, 0 in the middle. So if you want to detect the presence of a straight line in the image, you compute its Huff transform, go to the Huff space, and look for bright pixels. And the value of this will be equal to the number of pixels on the line. So you put a limit and say, give me all peaks that have values more than some threshold. And then those correspond to potential lines in the image with the corresponding rho and theta, or rho that way and theta this way. So the procedure to detect straight lines is discretize the rho theta parameter space into bins by quantizing rho and theta such that rho k is k as rho k, k going 0 to k minus 1, and theta l going 0 to l minus 1. You have to allow only a certain number of values for discrete representation. The bins are called accumulator cells because each time, for each pixel in the image, that is a white pixel, a certain bin will be accumulated, or certain bins are accumulated. Suitable limits may be imposed on these ranges. You may say that I'm interested in lines only between 45 degrees and 96 degrees or something. Similarly, the distance from the origin could also be limited. For each point in the given image that has a value of 1, and now we are assuming that you have already performed edge detection and binarization, you increment by 1 each accumulator cell in the rho theta space, which is the Huff accumulator space, that satisfies this relationship, rho equal to xn cos theta plus yn sin theta, where theta and rho are the corresponding values, rho k, l k, converted to the appropriate units by scaling as required. Now, here is an exact equality, but you may have to put a threshold there, because in practice, you may not get exactly those values with the quantized values used. So you could translate this to this approximately equal to within plus minus some limit. The coordinates of the point of intersection of all the curves in the parameter space will provide the parameters of the line. Now this is, I said D line, assuming there is only one line. Of course, there could be multiple lines. So if there are multiple lines, you detect all peaks in the Huff space. And you could put some conditions and say, I don't care for lines that are less than 5 pixels long. You could also put conditions on detecting peaks that are separated by certain parameter values and appropriate conditions depending upon the applications. So if several lines exist, there'll be a need to search for all possible points of intersection. And there could be multiple lines, multiple contours intersecting in the Huff space, so you have to detect local maxima and reject some maxima that may be less than a certain condition certain number of pixels in terms of length of the line. So the value or the count in an accumulator cell represents the number of pixels that lie on a straight line or line segments having the corresponding rotator. So you could apply some conditions on that. So here is another example with two lines, where you have all of these sinusoidal curves for one, the long line here and the short line here. So there are two maxima that you have to detect. Now, when these curves intersect here, there is another local maximum there. So these two are not the only two points of intersection. So you need to be cautious in searching for all peaks in the half space. You need to put some conditions. So these points should not be detected as lines, only these, and for that you need some conditions on the local maxima in the half space. So the inclusion of the additional line, as you can see, has created this second set of sinusoidal curves all intersecting for this angle theta and that value of rho. So I'll go back there, and the second part comes here. Okay. Now this is the general principle for the detection of straight lines using the Huff's method, but the same method is applicable to any other parametric shape or object that you want to detect with appropriate characterization of that shape or object. So you can easily extend it to, for example, detection of circles. All points along the perimeter of a circle of radius C centered at xy equal to AB, AB being the center coordinates, will be given by this equation, x minus a square plus y minus b square equal to c square. C is the radius. Now, in the half parameter space, you need three values to represent a circle, A, B, C. So the dimensionality of the half space now is 3. So if you have some other equation for some other object, you may have 4, 5, 6 parameters, and the dimensionality of the half space will increase accordingly. So computationally, it becomes a bit more difficult, and you may have to limit these values so that you don't run into huge arrays, accumulator cells in the half space. Note that the range for AB is the entire range for X and Y. So if your image is 1,000 by 1,000, A and B will be 1,000 and 1,000. The value for C is the radius. So there you may put a limit and say, I care only for circles that are between 5 and 10 pixels in radius. So it could be, the half space could be 1,000 by 1,000 by 10 or 20 or whatever limit that you place on C. So the points along the perimeter of a circle in the XY plane then describe a right circular cone in the ABC parameter space. So if you use the same equation and then switch to the half space, the variables are A, B, and C in the half space. And X and Y are constants. So you have again this part, which is a circle for a given C. So as the value of C changes, then the radius of the circle changes, and that forms a circular cone in the ABC parameter space. So the same idea applies now. When you have a circle, all of these points, each point will have a corresponding pattern in the half space, and all of them will intersect at some point which will correspond to the ABC coordinates or values for that circle. So here is an image with a single circle. I made a 30 by 30 image with a circle of radius 10 pixels and the center is 15, 15. So in this case, I found it convenient to have 0, 0 there and the center is 15, 15. So depending upon the representation, you may change your coordinate axis or system. So for different values of C in the half space, for each value of C, you get an image The half space is three-dimensional, so one axis is A, the other axis is B, and C will give you different planes. So I ran the half program. Each image or plane here in the half space is 30 by 30 pixels, which is the same size as the image. And I ran C with 1, 2, 3, 4 going up to 36. I could have made it a smaller range, but you have 36 planes for the value C. And if you were to search for the global maximum in the entire three-dimensional half space, you will get it here, which is at the center of the image, AB, so AB 15 in the middle, and C equal to 10, so 6 and 4, 10. So that's the global maximum. And in the half space, if you search for the global maximum and check the corresponding A, B, and C, you detect the circle. Now, there could be many other local maxima. And of course, you don't have circles for those other local maxima, so you need to apply appropriate conditions. If not, you may detect several potential circular regions or objects or candidates for circles. Then you go back to the image domain and ask, what do I have there? Suppose you detect a local maximum at, let's say that point. That point could be A equal to 20, 30, and then radius equal to 11. So go back to the image and draw a circle and ask, what do we have there? If that region satisfies your conditions for the object you are trying to detect, then you keep that, otherwise throw it. So you may allow other peaks to be detected or a number of peaks to be detected in the half space and go back to the image domain and then verify if they really represent an object or the kind of object you want to detect. So here is a simple application where I took the collagen fiber image. There are circular objects here. They're not circles. Got the edge map. I don't remember what I used. Sobel or Privet, in the book I have explained that. Anyway, this is the edge map. Note that you don't need complete circles. Even if the circles are broken, it's okay. As long as there are a number of pixels around the periphery of a circle, then in the half space, you will get a local maximum, depending upon the number of pixels around that contour, which approximates a circle. And it need not be a perfect circle, of course. Now, what I did here to show you what is happening in the half space is I created a negative version of the edge map and superimposed that with a selected plane from the half space. In the half space, we expect a peak at the center of each circle of a certain radius. So here in C, I took the edge map and overlaid that with a scale version of C equal to 5, a circle of radius 5 pixels. And wherever you see a bright point, that indicates a circle, potentially, of radius 5 pixels. So you see some bright points here, there, there. In a big circle, you don't see that. And if you were to look here in part D, I use the C equal to 7 plane. C is the radius, so radius of 7 pixels. And for reference, the size of the image is 85 pixels. And with 7, we see peaks for some other, for larger circles, but not for the smaller circles. So if I detect local maxima or peaks in the half space, I didn't do that, I just showed qualitatively here how you could do it. Detect these peaks and then come and correspond, check the corresponding region in the image and check if it is, for example, here a dark region, because here collagen fibers are dark. So ask, in that region, in the original image, are those pixels dark? If yes, accept that as a collagen fiber. And take this corresponding edge map values and put it there. Then mark it as a circle detected. It's not a perfect circle, but still you get a peak in the half space. And the same for other circles. There's another example. Okay, these are the half parameter space images. Each image is representing A along one axis, B along another axis, which are the image coordinates, and C goes 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 12 pixels for the radius of the circle. So in each plane, you have to search for maxima, and then you have to put some conditions that it must be a local grouping of values and not spread out. So apply a peak detection algorithm, detect these bright peaks that you can see here, for example, and then this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 is here. So there'll be peaks here in each plane corresponding to potential circles in the edge map. So detect the local peaks, go back, and check the corresponding values. There's another example which is a little bit more clear. The collagen fibers from the normal image, where you see big circles and small circles. So here the difference is more obvious.
And in part C, I superimpose C equal to 13 pixels. The size of the image is 143 by 157 pixels. So C equal to 13 in part C, and C equal to 20 in part D. Superimpose on the negative of the edge map. So the edges of the fibers are seen here in black. And if you see a light lit up here, a bright point in the center, it means there is a corresponding peak in that plane of the half space. So for part C, its radius of 13 pixels, you see 1, 2, 3 of the circles with large values in the corresponding half space plane. So if you are able to detect those peaks, then you have detected these objects. And in the C equal to 20 plane, you see right values 1, 2, 3, 4. And hopefully you will not detect that. It's not a, there's a hole there in the middle. So it's not one right value. So you have to have a fairly sophisticated algorithm to detect these peaks. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And those circles are bigger, of course. And note that this circle is not complete. And even then, you get a peak, because you have enough number of pixels around the periphery or perimeter of that circle, which is incomplete, still there is a local maximum in the half space. And these points in the edge map are on, that is one. So, and if you look at the corresponding circles in the C equal to 13 plane, they don't have a maximum. They don't have a local maximum. So these don't have local maximum there, and these small circles don't have local maximum there. So that shows that this method is working. The problem will be in detecting the local peaks, local maximum. You need an appropriate algorithm to detect them. This is the half space. Each slice here is of the same dimensions as the image, the original image. You could possibly downsample and cut this and not have the computation run for every pixel. But here I ran for all the pixels, and I'm showing for C going 1 to 20. In practice, you are not interested in C being 1, 2, 3 pixels. The circle of radius 1 pixel is just 1 pixel, so doesn't make sense, but I still ran it there. So there are many local maxima you can see here. You need to detect all of them, go back to the original image if necessary and check what you have there, and then make a decision. Just a minute, let me check. Alright, we'll just go for a couple more minutes and then we can take a break. Now when you have a certain region that you have detected, using these methods. You may want to improve those regions later by applying some post-processing techniques. But it is quite often the case that the contour of an ROI provided by one of these methods that we are discussing does not satisfy the user. The boundary of the tumor obtained by region drawing may not be a perfect boundary, so you may want to do something more to fit that boundary, modify it to fit the real contour a little better. The user may also wish to impose conditions such as smoothness, that you don't want a contour that goes like that around an object, but you would want it to be smooth. So additional processing might be required. You also have to authenticate the result by an expert in the field, such as a radiologist in the case of melanomas. In such cases, you may have to modify the contour of the region that you obtain using these techniques. And there are several techniques. You could apply a polynomial parabolic model. And in the chapter 6, I will show polynomial modeling. And it's also possible to do parabolic modeling or even fit B-spline or Bezier curves. You could develop interactive techniques, and my collaborator in Brazil, Dr. Denise Gulliat, and her colleagues, they have developed an interactive system where on the monitor you can show the mammogram and the contour detected by some segmentation method. And then you can go manually remove parts of the contour and fill the gap with a smooth curve or correct for some parts that have included wrong regions, and you can edit the contour on the monitor. There are techniques known as active contour models or snakes, and in my book I have shown an example in the detection of the breast boundary. Again, I don't have the time for that. The live wire technique was proposed by Urupai and others, where it is user-guided segmentation, where the user specifies certain points and then allows the automatic procedure to continue from there or can modify the result. And fusion of multiple results of segmentation, which is described in a section in this chapter. I may not have the time to do that. Where you could apply multiple techniques for the segmentation of the same region. Each technique will give you a different result. And if you know that a certain technique has a certain measure of reliability, and the other one has a certain measure of reliability, then you may combine all of these or fuse these results to obtain a fuzzy result of segmentation. And then, if you want to apply a threshold to that, and then get a hard binary segmentation. So the fuzzy fusion method was proposed by Denise Gulliato. I worked with her on that, and there is a section in this chapter. Quite likely you will not have the time to do that. But if you are interested, you can look into that. But these are some techniques that are useful in modifying contours or regions that you may estimate using one of these techniques we have seen, and then hopefully get a better result. There's an interesting application that we worked on the detection of the spinal canal in CT images. We'll take this up after a brief break. So let's take a break for about 10 minutes.